Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space, and time travel. Science and technology. Brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku.
At GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology. Science which changes your life. Science which changes the way you view the world around you. Now, we've had a number of programs on this show about the origin of the universe, the origin of the Earth, the origin of life on this planet. Today, we're going to be talking about something different. We're going to be talking about the origin of humanity itself. Where did we come from? How did we evolve over thousands of years? You know, when you see movies like The Lord of the Rings, you realize that it's a fanciful world, a world populated by orcs, by gremlins, and by elves, and also by humans. And we say to ourselves, nah, come on, that's not the world we live in. But wait a minute. Now we have archaeological finds showing that we humans coexisted with other varieties of humanity for tens of thousands of years. With us today is Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University and author of an exciting new book, The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins. And also, let me say a few things about Science Fantastic. If you want to get on Science Fantastic, give us a call at 612-564-8135. And if you want to know more about the show, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 5 million fans on Facebook, and I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. My latest New York Times bestseller is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. That's what I do for a living. That's why New York City pays my salary, to work on something called string theory. I'm the co-founder of one of the main branches of string theory, string field theory, and the goal of string theory is to find an equation, perhaps no more than 1 inch long, that will allow us to, quote, read the mind of God. Those are the words of Albert Einstein. Well, today we're not going to talk about the origin of the universe. We're not going to talk about the origin of everything. No, we're going to talk about the origin of you and me, the origin of humanity. And once again, the book is called The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins. And we're delighted to have with us today Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University. And we were very happy to track him down in Vienna. And his research focuses on the extinction of the Neanderthals and the early history of humanity going back 50,000 years into the past. So, Professor, tell us a little bit about your youth. When you were a child, what set you off on this great journey to become a scientist, an anthropologist, and to research the origin of humanity? How did it all start when you were a child?
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for the invitation. I'm really privileged to be with you and with all your listeners tonight. So I was very fortunate because I come from a family which has quite an archaeological bent to it. My dad, in fact, is an archaeologist, and he has worked for more than 50 years in Southeast Asia, and he's interested in the research to understand more about how humans became settled, in terms of settled societies and how states formed. So he's looking at this period from about 5,000 to 6,000 years ago when states begin in islands, in mainly in Southeast Asia. So from a very young age, I was exposed to archaeology. In fact, when I was a little baby, I was on my first excavations. But it wasn't until I was a teenager that I knew what it was about, and I participated in several excavations. And when I was at university, I took stage one anthropology, which was archaeology and anthropology. And because it was my dad who was one of the lecturers, I worked really, really hard because I didn't want to let him down, you know, or embarrass him. And so for that reason, I did rather better than I thought. And so I became interested. And then subsequently, I did a couple of postgraduate degrees. And then I moved more into the science of archaeology, the archaeological science area, because I think that this is the area where we're finding out a huge amount of new information about the past, and it's a very profitable area. So I grew up in New Zealand, and I went to Oxford following some postdoctoral work in New Zealand, and I was there since 2001. And so I'm very privileged and lucky to be able to work in this fascinating field.
Okay, let's take us back a bit to the 1800s. Back in the Victorian era, it was very simple because humanity was the only game in town. But then we found bones of the Neanderthals. Tell us a little bit about what kind of shock Victorian England felt, realizing that perhaps we weren't alone, that humanity was not the only game in town. Tell us about those times.
Absolutely. So, of course, in the 1800s, we had the development of the realization and really the formalization of the knowledge that the Earth was much older than had previously been thought, and the idea slowly set to one side of this biblical explanation for the origins of the Earth and the origins of people and animals. And in 1856, in August, a very significant event happened, which was the discovery in a valley near Dusseldorf in Germany of the remains of a human that didn't look like us today. It looked somewhat different, surprisingly different. And through sheer good fortune, a local archaeologist was able to recover these bones from limestone cavers who were digging these caves and destroying them largely. And he recovered them and described them to the world a couple of years later in 1858. And these were the remains of what we now know to be the Neanderthals. And this came as an absolute shock to the Victorian science, the knowledge that there was another group of people out there that wasn't us, but clearly was something closely related to us, was really a bolt from the blue. Initially, the reconstructions of these early Neanderthals, as we now call them, was rather biased. They were viewed as really rather primitive and brutish and a backward group of people. But subsequently, more than a century later, archaeologists have managed to put a great deal more flesh on the bones of Neanderthals and to understand more about their behavior and their adaptation, the way they lived and the way they subsisted. And we now know that far from being you know, what they previously were looked at as rather like the typical cavemen, that actually they were much more capable than we've given them credit for. And so we have there's been a huge new interpretation shone, a light has been shone on the Neanderthal and the Neanderthal group. They were actually a remarkably successful lineage of our genus, and they survived and prospered periodically, rather successfully, over a quarter of a million years, mainly in Western Europe, but also in the Levant and the Near East, in Central Asia, and even as far east as Central Siberia, where remains of Neanderthals were found as recently as 2007. So the jury has been out for a while on Neanderthals, but we're now starting to appreciate that they were at least much more advanced than we previously thought them to be.
Okay, Professor, we have to take a short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue our discussion of branches of humanity. Do you know that perhaps five different varieties of humanity existed, perhaps simultaneously, in our early history? Well, you are listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call at 612-564-8135. Ask a question, and maybe you can get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. So give us a call.
What better gift to give your loved ones than the gift of good health? And where better to buy those good health gifts than sunny-bay.com? Hey, it's great that you're hearing this message now, because buying your holiday gifts from Sunny Bay early will save you money. And that's just one reason why Sunny Bay is in business and has been for over 15 years, helping you with fashionable and useful products for better health. See our unique and quality made travel pillows, or our unique neck and body wraps that help immediate pain relief and deep muscle relaxation, come in a wide variety of uses, apply hot or cold therapy, and are all made in the U.S. See our great selection, affordable prices, and wonderful health products at sunny-bay.com. And remember, order early when our stock is high and shipping is fast. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're going to talk about a new book, The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins, by Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University, an authority on the extinction of the Neanderthals. And we're talking about what the world was like tens of thousands of years ago, when we perhaps coexisted, not just with other Homo sapiens, but coexisted with perhaps four other branches of humanity. Amazing. But that's what we're talking about today. Well, Professor Higham, we were last talking about the Neanderthals. And the question is, well, how advanced were they? Did they make tools? Did they bury their dead? Did they have art? Did they have abstract thought? What are your thoughts about how developed they were? Because, of course, they survived during the Ice Age for thousands of years.
Indeed. And as I said before the commercial break, a great deal of archaeological research has been undertaken in the last few decades that concerns our understanding of Neanderthals and their adaptation. And it turns out that in many respects, they were very similar to anatomically modern humans, or Homo sapiens, who were living at around the same time. And we know that there was a degree of overlap between the two, and so it's quite possible that there could have been, there definitely was contact between the two groups, and it's possible that there could have been the exchange of ideas and creative thoughts between these two groups. But we've got a lot of new evidence that Neanderthals were much more capable. For example, often we thought that humans were the sole producers of what we call ornaments of symbolic nature. So these would be things like pierced shells that are worn around the neck, for example, or in clothes. And these are thought very, very strongly to designate some kind of symbolic meaning. They could, for example, denote membership of a group. They could denote something of a religious or ritual nature. And previously, as I said, humans were thought to be the sole users of these types of very symbolic artifacts. But we have evidence now that suggests that Neanderthals were also capable of doing some of the things, and at a very early age. For example, at a site in Spain, we found these very interesting shell artifacts that appear to have been perforated. Holes have been put through them. And we found minerals on them that could only have come from a deliberate application from another source. We found evidence that Neanderthals could have been interested in going into caves and perhaps even producing art. In fact, we found three sites in Spain that have produced dates that go back more than 67,000 years, well before the first anatomically modern humans arrive in these regions, and therefore are thought very strongly to only have been made by Neanderthals. And so more and more evidence is now coming to light that suggests that these Neanderthals, these extinct cousins of ours, were actually more capable than we thought. And it's really interesting to think that perhaps when these two groups met one another about 40 to 50,000 years ago, that there may have been some cross-pollination in terms of ideas and creativity, and that we may have learned from them, whereas previously we thought that it was only the Neanderthals that learned from us.
Okay, now, of course, people sign up for Ancestry.com or 23andMe, and they're shocked to find when the readout comes that perhaps 1-2% of their DNA comes from the Neanderthals, and perhaps some of the genes that we inherited from them actually made us better equipped to handle the Ice Age. So what are your thoughts about cross-pollination and DNA evidence, which seems to indicate that there was cross-breeding between us and the Neanderthals?
Yes, this is really, really fascinating. I mean, prior to 2010, many paleoanthropologists thought that there was perhaps either minimal contact between Neanderthals and Homo sapiens, or there was a very short amount of overlap between them. And some of the work that we initially did was to provide really reliable radiocarbon dates for the latest Neanderthal sites in Western Europe and other places, and the earliest anatomically modern human sites. And when we published a large synthesis on this in 2014, we found that actually, surprisingly to us, that there was a period of between 2,500 to 5,000 years when Neanderthals and modern humans must have been overlapping in Europe. And so it became quite likely, in our view, that there must have been some kind of close relationship on occasion between them. And this was confirmed and has been confirmed spectacularly by the discovery of, firstly, the sequencing of the Neanderthal genome, and in parallel, the sequencing of the modern human genome, that shows unequivocally, as you say, that many, many people in the world, particularly outside of Africa, although we do have Neanderthal DNA evidence as well in African people, they have a legacy of a very small amount of Neanderthal DNA, about 2 to 2.5% on average. And as you say, this is absolutely fascinating because we can now determine what is the contribution of that DNA to us in functional terms. What is the DNA that we inherit, and what does it code for? What is the function of some of the genes? And what we find is that in some cases, it seems to be positive. So you mentioned better coping with ice age conditions. And there is evidence that some of the genetic variants that we get from Neanderthals codes for things like a better quality of skin and collagen and hair, and that this may have been something that was beneficial to our ancestors as we emerged from Africa and dispersed into Eurasia. But there was also there were also other things that were less advantageous to us, that were rather deleterious, if you like, and negative, and had negative consequences. So, for example, the genetic variants that are strongly associated with type 2 diabetes also come from Neanderthals. This shouldn't be taken as evidence that Neanderthals suffered from type 2 diabetes. In contrast, it's likely that, that there were benefits to the variants that they inherited and they passed on to one another. For example, it could have been that in ice age conditions, it was more beneficial to store sugars in the body. And it's only nowadays in our modern world that we have negative outcomes from this. And there are other things that as well we inherited from Neanderthals that seem negative now. For example, addictive behaviors, for example, to things like smoking are strongly associated with Neanderthals. And lupus is another one. So there are several things that that we get that are negative, and the race now is on to find out more and more about what differentiates us and Neanderthals and whether there is anything, for example, cognitive that may be significant to help us explain why it is that we are the only group of humans on the Earth now and there are no more Neanderthals.
Well, we had one archaeologist on the air who said that there's some indication, not necessarily 100%, but some indication that red hair came from the Neanderthals. Has that held up with time?
No, it hasn't actually. And some very interesting data comes out of modern health studies on this. So in the UK, the United Kingdom, there's a very big study of modern human health, and it's called the UK Biobank. And thousands and thousands of people have had their DNA sequenced, and they've answered a series of questionnaires which gives information about their behavior and what they do, what time they get out of bed, what kind of mobile phone they use, you know, what color their hair is, and so on and so forth. And this evidence can then be compared against Neanderthal DNA. And what we find is that some of the genetic variants associated with Neanderthals that code for things like skin color and hair color actually don't, red hair doesn't leap out as one of these. And I think what we can take from this, the evidence that we can take from this, suggests that it's likely that there was a variety in Neanderthal hair colors and skin colors perhaps as well. And that it's not simply the case that Neanderthals had red hair. They had a variety of different types of hair colors. And it may well be, rather like we find in the present day and populations on Earth today, that there's this variety that is influenced by location, environment, climate, and so on. And so I think the evidence now suggests that it's not as simple as thinking that all Neanderthals had red hair. In fact, that's the opposite of what we're now seeing. And as I say, it's really fascinating because it's based upon huge amounts of data that's been collected from people like you and me who've given their permission to large medical biobanks that are now used for the public good to understand more about medical science.
Okay, let's take another short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to talk about other varieties of humanity that coexisted with Homo sapiens. You're listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call if you want to get on 100 radio stations. The number to call is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters in the radio station or website, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on national radio on Science Fantastic. Give us a call.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Biden is responding to a disappointing September jobs report. The Labor Department said fewer than 200,000 jobs were created last month. Analysts predicted the number would be twice as large. President Biden explained the reason.
Today's report is based on a survey that was taken during the week of September the 13th.
He said cases of COVID-19 have been decreasing. And he said Americans have been hearing the news from Washington as just noise.
Every disagreement is a crisis. But when you take a step back and look at what's happening, we're actually making real progress.
China is calling on the U.S. to withdraw troops from Taiwan in response to reports that a small presence of American troops have been training forces there for at least a year. U.S. officials confirmed that a small contingent of Marines are there. This is USA Radio News. The Department of Justice has declined to charge a white Wisconsin police officer in the shooting of a black man last year that left him paralyzed from the waist down. Kenosha police officer Rustin Chesky shot Jacob Blake during a domestic disturbance last August. The incident sparked several protests, including one where an Illinois man shot three people and two of them died. No state charges were filed because prosecutors say Blake had a knife. The Justice Department conducted a civil rights investigation and determined there wasn't enough evidence to show the officer used excessive force or violated Blake's federal rights. A jury in Boston has convicted two fathers in the college admissions cheating scandal. Police say John Wilson and Kamal Abdul-Aziz used fraud and bribery to get their kids into the University of Southern California with bogus athletic scholarships. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen.
Come
here.
On, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Wasn't it a beautiful wedding?
Oh, yes. And they make such a lovely couple.
Excuse me. Is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the group?
Hey, pal. You cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
Hey, hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop this senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're going to talk about the origin of humanity. We've had programs about the origin of the universe, the origin of the earth, the origin of life and DNA. And now we're going to talk about, well, the origin of you and me. Did you know that perhaps up to five different versions of humans coexisted in some parts of the world thousands of years ago, maybe more? It's like a movie from Lord of the Rings. With us today is Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University, author of an exciting new book, The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins. Well, Professor Higham, if we coexisted with the Neanderthals, then the next question is, what happened to them? Did we outcompete them? Did we slaughter them? Did they simply die out because of disease? What is known or not known about what happened to the Neanderthals?
Yes, it's a very important question that many people have spent a lot of time thinking about and undertaking research on. I think that recent research has shed a lot of light on some of the main reasons, and I discuss these some of these reasons in my book. But I'm very careful to hedge my bet. I think there may well be more than one reason, but I think one very significant reason is likely to be population size. And what we've found, with the application of genomic data, so DNA evidence from some of these human bones that have been analyzed of Neanderthals, is we are able to look at the nuclear DNA, and that comes from comes to us from our parents. And if our parents are very closely related, we find that there are long tracks of the DNA that are very similar. They give you the same base pair sequence. And in many cases, the Neanderthals, evidence from Neanderthals has shown us that it's likely that the people that, that were the parents of the bone, of the bones that we're analyzing were probably quite closely related to one another. And this suggests that the population of Neanderthals was likely quite low. In fact, recent analysis of some Neanderthals who lived in Siberia shows that they have the, about the same level of population diversity and population numbers as mountain gorillas do today in parts of Africa. And we know that mountain gorillas are a very are a population under a great deal of stress. And so I think the evidence now is pointing to the fact that it may well have been simply a numbers game in the end, that it wasn't so much perhaps the fact that Neanderthals were less capable as modern humans were. It may simply have been that there were fewer of them, and that slowly over a period of thousands of years, their population was simply overcome by the larger populations of Homo sapiens that were emerging out of Africa. I think that's one of the most likely reasons, and some of the modeling work that's been done recently suggests that all you would need is a slow drip of newly arriving modern humans coming into places like Europe for Neanderthals to slowly disappear and go extinct.
Well, what about the theory that we outcompeted them because we coexisted with them? Perhaps we were better hunters. Perhaps we had better tools, better weapons to hunt game. So not that we killed them, but we simply outpopulated them and had better access to food and resources. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I think it's a very persuasive argument because, of course, ultimately, there was only one winner in the case, in the sense of the evolutionary game that we're talking about. But what we see over in the archaeological record is that any seeming advantage that we had over them.
Okay, well, let's take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue about other branches of humanity. Five different branches, we think, coexisted. And we'll talk about that after the break. And give us a call if you want to get on Science Fantastic. 612-564-8135 is the number to call if you want to get on national radio and the Internet. So give us a call.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
What will you do if there's a sudden food shortage? Given recent headlines, it seems likely, and at any moment. That's why it makes common sense to build your emergency food storage supply now, while you still can. Do it with the kind of food that stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Food that doesn't go bad like what you get at the grocery store. Whose food should you trust? The largest preparedness company in America, My Patriot Supply. We've served millions of American families going on 14 years. At MyPatriotSupply.com, our mission is your survival. Our emergency food could definitely be your lifesaver when the peanut butter hits the fan. Choose from dozens of delicious meal kits that provide over 2,000 calories a day, which is what your body needs. Order today and your food will ship fast in unmarked boxes to protect your privacy. Don't wait. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University. The book is called The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins. And once again, if you want to find out more about Science Fantastic, then go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 5 million fans on Facebook. I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. My latest New York Times bestseller is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. Is it possible, as Einstein believed, that one day we might find an equation perhaps no more than 1 inch long that will allow us to, quote, read the mind of God? These are the words of a man who set the pace for 20th century science, Albert Einstein. So find out more about this by getting a copy of my book. Well, once again with us today is Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University, and we're talking about a world where not just Homo sapiens ruled the world, but perhaps there were five different branches of humanity coexisting. The next branch we want to talk about is the Denisovans. So isn't it true that we don't have complete skeletons of this other variety of humanity, but basically DNA from tooth fragments? But what do we know about this other branch, the Denisovans?
So, yes, the Denisovans were initially brought to light and published in Science in 2010, which coincidentally was the same year that we sequenced the Neanderthal genome. And that was a very interesting thing because the DNA from a Denisovan came from a tiny finger bone from a girl who was probably around 13 years old. So this tiny little finger, the little pinky finger, the little bone at the end of your littlest finger, was excavated at a site in Siberia called Denisova Cave. And this bone was sequenced genetically, and that showed conclusively that this was something different, not a Neanderthal, not a modern human, but something else. And we now know that Denisovans were probably a group of humans that rather like Neanderthals, you could think of them as closely related to Neanderthals, sort of cousins of Neanderthals, who lived predominantly in the east of Eurasia. So east of the middle of Eurasia, so places like China, Japan, Southeast Asia, and in the middle of the continent in Siberia. And so this came as a major, major surprise that there was this other form of human out there that coexisted with Neanderthals and with early anatomically modern humans as we progressed out of Africa and into this new part of the world for our particular species. And you're absolutely right. There is a very small amount of material of a Denisovan. In fact, you could fit them all on the in one hand. We have no skeletons. We have no complete skulls. We have possibly we have a small jawbone, a small piece of a skull, and the rest of the material are three small teeth and a couple of other tiny, tiny bones. So the race is really on to find bigger remains of Denisovans and to figure out who they were, what their distribution was, why they went extinct, and so on.
And isn't it true that we found evidence of a mating that took place between the Neanderthals and the Denisovans, meaning that, of course, perhaps humanity was mixing with other branches of humanity much more frequently than we previously thought?
Absolutely true. And, in fact, we find that amongst people living today, that there is, rather like with the Neanderthals, there is a small proportion of Denisovan DNA in people, for example, living in island Melanesia, in Australasia, in the subcontinent of India. We have small amounts of Denisovan DNA in Native American people, in people in China, people in Japan, even people in Finland have small amounts of Denisovan DNA. So you're absolutely right. There was an interbreeding event, probably more than one event, between our human ancestors and Denisovans living in these various parts of the world. And in fact, we find again and again when we sequence DNA from ancient remains dating back 40, 50,000 years, we find that again and again there is evidence for interbreeding in the ancestors, in the ancestry of those people. It was a common thing. When these people met, they interbred with one another. And that's a fascinating insight.
Okay, we have to take another short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of other branches of humanity. So some people think that there were five distinct varieties of humanity that coexisted. So the book is called The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins by Professor Thomas Higham. And give us a call at 612-564-8135. And maybe you can share your thoughts on 100 radio stations that carry science. Fantastic. Give us a call.
Angie's List is now Angie, and getting your to-do list done just got easier. Between back to school and with the holidays around the corner, it can feel like there's no time to tackle home projects. Whether you need help with emergency repairs or major upgrades, Angie matches you with top local pros who can get the job done right. Browse reviews, see upfront pricing, and instantly book hundreds of projects. Save time for what matters most. Book your next project at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Oh, whale! Guys, whale! Wow, whale.
Oh, that's a big whale. Okay, whale, whale, whale! Oh no, whale!
The tides can turn quick on the water. Progressive's boat insurance has you covered. Get a quote today in as little as 3 minutes at progressive.com.
Well, at least it wasn't a shark, am I right?
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
We've all seen, and perhaps use, the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Professor Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University, author of the book, The World Before Us, The New Science Behind Our Human Origins. We'll also talk about other branches of humanity, the Hobbit, and a new variety found in Luzon. But before that, let me ask you a quick question. It's believed by many anthropologists that around 70,000 years ago, there was a volcano that erupted Mount Tuba, and the violence of the volcano probably wiped out many species of animals in Africa, they think, among them perhaps humanity. Some people believe, though not everybody, but some people believe that only a handful of us, maybe 1,000 or so, survived, and we then repopulated the rest of the world afterwards. So in other words, we're all cousins because we all descended from maybe just 1,000 individuals 70,000 years ago. Has that theory held up? I understand it's controversial, but has that theory held up?
So no, it hasn't, because we found that actually the impact of the eruption may not have been as significant as previously thought. For example, one of my colleagues, Professor Michael Petralia, who works in the Max Planck Institute in Germany, he undertook excavations in India where he found an archaeological site which had evidence for this volcanic eruption. So large amounts of ash that had fallen on this. And don't forget, the eruption of Toba came all the way from the east to from Indonesia. So it was one of the biggest, well, probably the biggest eruption of the last half a million years, a massive, massive eruption. You're absolutely right. And what he found was that it buried archaeological evidence below the ash fall, but that shortly after, people repopulated the area above it. And therefore, it was suggested by him and his team that it perhaps wasn't such a significant effect for populations of humans. And so now we think that it may be, although significant, not as significant as we once thought, and therefore that perhaps there wasn't the same crash in human populations at that particular time.
Well, people who believe in that theory say that most animals at random are not closely genetically linked, but all humans, every single human on this planet is extremely genetically linked to each other, meaning that we all had a very small set of common ancestors, maybe 1,000. So how do people explain that fact, that in some sense all humans are very closely related to each other?
Yes. So I think that, well, there are two ways of looking at this. So, for example, in Africa, we have a great deal of genetic diversity compared with people outside of Africa. And that's true. And if, as you suggest, everybody in the world today is related to this very small group of people, then I think that the diversity that we see in Africa would be less. And so for that reason alone, I think that it's less likely that this volcanic eruption was so significant. For example, in Africa, we find very small traces of the eruption. By small traces, I'm talking about mineral grains that are so small that you can't see them with the naked eye. It's only possible to look at them and see them under high-resolution microscopes after you sift these little fragments out from lots and lots of sediment and archaeological sites. So I think that the impact on people living, for example, in Africa was less, much less than it was for other parts of the world. And therefore, the genetic diversity that we see in Africa is probably not as affected by this violent volcanic eruption as was once thought.
Okay, anyway, to return back to your book, there's also the controversy about the hobbits, a small group of individuals, humans, that look like midgets. But some people think that that's a natural occurrence. Maybe they were retarded. Maybe maybe they had less resources, access to food, and therefore became smaller. They're ordinary humans that became small. So tell us a little bit about the hobbits. Are they really a new branch of humanity?
Yes. I think that there is very, very strong and compelling evidence that they are. And that's because instead of one individual, we now have many more. And all of them have the same very diminutive stature. They're all very small, around three feet high in adult cases. And this can be explained by something that we find often on islands, which is the tendency for dwarfism on the one hand and gigantism on the other. So, for example, on the island of Flores, we have very large rats, giant rats, and we have very small humans, and we also have small elephants, small stegodons. And so on islands, sometimes strange things happen, and animals and humans are no exception, often evolve in different directions because of the reduction or the increase in different pressures that are operating on them evolutionarily in selection terms. And so there's nothing surprising about this, I think, although at the time that the discovery was made in 2004, you're absolutely right, there were some people that suggested that these weren't a different group of humans. They were just perhaps, small or diseased or pathologically influenced. But now we think that that's not the case because, as I say, we have many more examples. And also we know that the dates that were originally obtained for the hobbits, which came as young as 18,000 years ago, are not actually reliable. Now we think that hobbits disappeared probably when the first modern humans arrived at around 45 to 50,000 years ago.
And in addition, we have yet another branch of humanity found near Luzon. So tell us about the fifth branch of humanity.
Yes. Well, this was a paper. This was only published in 2018. So again, very, very recent. And rather like the hobbits, a similar thing happened there. So a group of pioneering hominins, we're not quite sure when, but it could be several hundred thousand years ago, arrived on the island there and became isolated, and then they evolved in this very peculiar direction as well. Now, don't forget, there are thousands of islands in island Southeast Asia. Can we expect to find more different hominins, different species of hominins there that are related to our genus? I think it's likely.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Once again, our special guest today has been Thomas Higham, Professor of Archaeological Science at Oxford University. Thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic.
Thank you.
And if you want to know more, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 5 million fans on Facebook. I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. And the latest bestseller is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. But the book today is called The World Before Us.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best, deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.